Okay, we'll go ahead and introduce everybody. So, good afternoon, and welcome to the Spring 2021 Mental Health Action Week Cultural Centers panel. I'm Sarah McGovern, a graduate student in the Biochemistry Department, and I'll be mediating this panel. This afternoon, we'll focus on the topic of the effect of COVID-19 on underrepresented populations, mental health and well-being, and how the cultural centers are working in response. We'll be hearing individually from panelists representing the cultural centers at Purdue CAPS, and after their presentations, we will open the floor for a Q&A session. This event is also being recorded, and a recording will be made available through the PGSG website for asynchronous viewing later on. Without further ado, I would like to introduce our spectacular panelists for this evening in the order they will be speaking. First, Renee Thomas is joining us today. She is the director of the Black Cultural Center at Purdue. She received her master's degree in college student personnel from Ohio University and has over 20 years of experience in higher education administration. Under her leadership, the Purdue Black Cultural Center has been transformed into a nationally recognized center and is now considered one of the best collegiate cultural centers in the country. Next, Pamela Azari will be presenting. She is the director of the Asian American and Asian Resource and Cultural Center, or ARC. She earned her PhD in American Studies from Purdue University in 2019, specializing in the intersection of religion and transnational Asian and immigrant communities before becoming the director of ARC in 2020. After Pam, we'll be hearing from Felica Apostine Bryant, who is the director of the Native American Educational and Cultural Center. She has worked in the field of education for over 25 years with emphasis in student engagement and leadership, diversity and inclusion initiatives, and recruitment and retention of students. She has been leading the Purdue campus-wide Native American initiative since 2009. Mamie Butler will be speaking after Felica. They are a staff therapist at Purdue Counseling and Psychological Services and a Black student liaison. They are originally from Oakland, California, and graduated from Dillard University in New Orleans. They earned a master's degree in counseling psychology from Western Michigan University, where they are currently finishing their doctoral work. Finally, Luis Balcazar is a care manager at Purdue CAPS and is a liaison to the cultural centers. He received his degree from the Boston College School of Social Work and now works at CAPS focusing on identity development issues, diversity issues, mood-related disorders, and many others. Before we get into individual presentations, I will be playing a brief video tour of the Purdue Cultural Centers. So let me go ahead and share my screen quickly for everybody. And just let me know if you can see this okay. Okay, let me make sure that I'm also sharing my audio for everyone.
Yeah, campus.
The Asian American and
let me start from the beginning.
Hi,
and welcome to Purdue University's Cultural Center's video tour.
Did you know Purdue has 5 cultural centers on the West Lafayette campus?
The Asian American and Asian Resource and Cultural Center,
the Latino Cultural Center,
the Native American Educational and Cultural Center,
the Black Cultural Center,
and the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Center.
All of the centers provide a welcoming environment
for everyone in the Purdue community
to connect, discover, and experience
the incredibly rich diversity on our campus.
So, let's take a quick tour and see what each center has to offer.
Welcome to the Asian American Asian Resource and Cultural Center, also known as the ARC for short. The ARC was founded in spring 2015 as a result of more than a decade-long activism by Purdue students supported by faculty and staff. The first floor features a lounge, the central gathering place where students can relax, hang out, participate in events, and discover the diversity of the Asian and Asian American communities on campus.
So Purdue University is home to more than 10,000 Asian American and Asian international students. The ARC's mission is to weave the diverse experiences of Asian American and Asian international communities into the fabric of Purdue's campus life.
The center features a growing library of books, movies, and games for checkout. It also features spaces for student organizations to hold meetings. You can get a coffee or grab a snack from the kitchen before heading upstairs to study in the university-supported computer lab. The ARC holds speaker and conversation series events throughout the year that examines various Asian and Asian American identities and diversity. The center also invites Purdue's campus to cultural programming to engage the rich Asian cultural heritage, arts, performances, ceremonies, and celebrations. In many ways, the Asian American and Asian Resource and Cultural Center is a home away from home for the growing Asian population on campus. But more importantly, it's a place for everyone. We invite you to stop in and check it out.
Todos son bienvenidos, which in English means all are welcome. Not only is that a motto at the Latino Cultural Center, but a guiding principle. As soon as you walk into the vibrant center, you will feel that you belong. The LCC serves as a hub for Latinx activities on campus, and a lot of it happens here, in the Marisela Alvarado Lounge on the first floor, where students connect with each other through meaningful conversations about Latinx culture and more.
The Latino Cultural Center was founded in 2003. We have been recognized as a national model for Latino cultural centers. We are only one of two Latino cultural centers in the state of Indiana.
With over 1,000 texts in its collection, the library provides a significant educational resource for Latinx history and culture. You can reserve time in the fully equipped conference room, take advantage of the kitchen facilities for an event, or finish up a paper on the second floor in the university-supported computer lab. The Latino Cultural Center is much more than a building. It's a place to celebrate Latinx culture, a place to find familia, and a place for everyone. Stop by to see what the LCC has to offer.
Bozio, aye, aloha, and yate. This is just a small sample of greetings from the 65-plus indigenous nations represented on Purdue's campus. At the Native American Educational and Cultural Center, your heritage has a home. And you immediately feel that sentiment as you enter the lounge area, where students socialize, gather for meetings, and share experiences surrounded by historical and contemporary artwork representing a variety of indigenous communities.
The NACC provides a safe and inclusive learning environment for Purdue students, faculty, and staff to engage in meaningful conversations regarding Native American, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian people. We proudly serve the campus community in providing a variety of programs and services throughout the year, and one of our signature programs is the Sloan Indigenous Graduate Partnership Program. This is designed to bring Native American, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian students who are pursuing a master's or PhD in a STEM discipline.
You can discuss tribal nations in the multi-purpose room, grab a coffee from the kitchen, or hold a meeting in the fully equipped conference room. More educational opportunities can be found on the second floor library and university-supported computer lab. The Native American Educational Cultural Center is not only a home to Purdue's intertribal communities, but a place for everyone to explore. Please visit us to learn more about the many indigenous cultures that are a part of Purdue's rich diversity.
Founded in a period of Black student activism in the late 1960s, the Black Cultural Center is the most senior of the campus's cultural centers. The first on campus to be designed by an African-American architectural firm, this 18,000 square foot facility, built in 1999, emulates the layout of a traditional African village with a grand circle at the building center. The spirit and richness of the African-American culture can be seen in the artwork, artifacts, and even the receptionist desk on the first floor.
It's actually shaped in the design of the hull of a ship. And the ship has significant historical context for African Americans in that many enslaved Africans were transported from West Africa to the United States in the hull of a ship. One of our hallmark programs is what I call the heartbeat of the Black Cultural Center, which is our performing arts ensembles.
The ensemble groups rehearse and perform in the Antonio and Betty Zamora studio on the first floor. Also on the first floor are a former lounge and an exhibit hall, which often features student-created work. On the second floor, you'll find an expansive library with over 7,000 books, a large study space, and a university-supported computer lab. For over 50 years, the Black Cultural Center has provided a sense of belonging. We promote academic excellence, cultural pride, and a feeling of home for many students. The center has strengthened the understanding of the African American heritage for the entire campus. We invite all of the Purdue community to visit the BCC.
Purdue is ranked nationally in the top 20 for LGBTQ-friendly schools and number one in the state of Indiana. And a big reason for that is Purdue's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Center. As you enter, you're welcomed by a large study space and multi-purpose room, where every Friday during the academic year, the center hosts Fabulous Fridays. The LGBTQ Center is a dedicated safe zone that provides an inclusive and affirming location on campus for all.
One of the signature programs of the LGBTQ Center are the trainings and workshops that we do. You may know them as Safe Zone or Trans Inclusion Training. These are opportunities for the entire campus community. Global education is critical, and we try and emphasize the understanding of LGBTQ lives and histories through a global window. And so we take students on a 6-week, 6-credit-hour study abroad opportunity.
Off the main lounge, you'll find meeting rooms and a university-supported computer lab. The center also maintains an extensive library and displays a collection of original artwork and artifacts that communicates an all too often hidden history. With over 9,000 visits a year, the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Center has become a popular destination, not only for the LGBTQ community, but for the entire Purdue campus. The LGBTQ Center is here to support and help you. Please visit us today.
Thank you for taking Purdue University's Cultural Center's video tour.
While we did our best to show you
what makes each center a fantastic campus destination to explore,
we've only briefly touched upon the incredible resources
and opportunities you'll find at
the Asian American and Asian Resource and Cultural Center,
the Latino Cultural Center,
the Native American Educational and Cultural Center,
the Black Cultural Center,
and the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Center.
So please take that small step
into our cultural centers
and start your giant leap
into the rich cultural diversity
that exists at Purdue University.
Boiler up!
Okay. All right. So I will now be turning over the mic to Renee Thomas, who will be giving the first presentation. Renee, if you want to go ahead and share your screen. You are muted, Renee.
Okay, thank you so much. Can you guys see my screen now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, very good. Well, again, my name is Renee Thomas, and it's a pleasure to have you all here this afternoon to learn more about the cultural centers and our role to assist students in their mental health here at Purdue University. What I wanted to talk about today was actually two things, both the impact of COVID-19 and the racial unrest that African Americans have experienced and how that has impacted their mental health. And I'm going to begin by saying that Black students at Purdue are the most beautiful and brilliant and bright people among us. Oftentimes when we hear the narrative of the African-American experience, it sometimes is a negative one. And I really want to highlight the positive contributions of African-Americans throughout the presentation this afternoon. One of the things that I think is important is that, you know, as a country, we're experiencing two major national events, both the pandemic and some racial unrest that happened after the killing of George Floyd. And either one of those events will be enough to negatively impact mental health of African Americans. But the fact that these two have converged at the same time is really taking a toll on African American mental health. There are many consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic as it relates to mental health and the racial unrest. Things that students are experiencing can be classified as post-traumatic stress disorder, just stress in general, depression, anxiety. Some students were seeing an increase in substance use, and some students are even being impacted by domestic violence. And even before COVID-19, because COVID-19 has really caused some mental health issues on the community, but even prior to COVID-19, African-Americans were 20% more likely to experience mental health issues than the general population. And then to take a step further, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, anxiety among African-Americans had increased by 26%. And depression by 22% a week after the death of George Floyd. And I think what has happened is during that week, the video of George Floyd being held down with the police officer with his knee on the neck, people were traumatized by that, and it was everywhere in the media. You could not step away from social media and or TV. You could not access it, I should say, without seeing those images. And that definitely had an impact on stress and anxiety, as well as depression. There are some unique mental health or well-being impact as a result of COVID-19 and the racial unrest on African-American students. I think it's important to recognize that racism impacts virtually every element of mental and physical health. Sometimes people think you can just box racism and put it to the side, but for the African-American student, that's not the case. It's in every element of their physical and mental health. And because of COVID-19, we don't have the sense of community that we used to have. Black people in general have very strong community and family relationships, and those are hampered because of social distancing. So for instance, a lot of African Americans or Black students may have gone to houses of worship or church services to assist in their mental health and well-being, and that is no longer an option. Some of them develop relationships with students in schools. And as you know, again, because of the social isolation, some of our students still are not back in school. We're fortunate here at Purdue in that we are having classes and we are able to gather in small groups. But for some individuals, that is not necessarily the case. The one thing that I think that people don't really talk about is the emotional fatigue that happens, and the physical trauma of having to retell that story over and over again. I know whenever the racial unrest happened with George Floyd, we were often contacted by a variety of people wanting to get the BCC's perspective or wanting the BCC to participate in a program and activity, and not recognizing that the emotional fatigue that that causes students whenever they have to continue to relive those experiences. Also, African-American communities are impacted at a much higher percentage in terms of the lack of technology and food insecurity. And those two things really cause some anxiety and stress when you're not able to sign on because you don't have internet access, or perhaps you're not able to eat because of some food insecurity issues. And then I think that most of you have heard through the media that everybody is at the risk for COVID-19. However, Blacks are more likely to be infected and have severe symptoms and die from COVID than any other racial group. And just the fear of being infected sometimes causes stress. There are a lot more comorbidities that are in the African-American community, such as diabetes, and the fact that they are overrepresented in what is called essential work. Those African Americans don't have the flexibility sometimes of not going to work that their counterparts have. And then as we get ready to be vaccinated as a community, there is some strong level of distrust in the healthcare community as it relates to the African American experience. For those of you who may not be familiar with the Tuskegee experiment or perhaps Henrietta Lacks, I would encourage you to look those up. And the distrust is real. And I know that there have been multiple surveys out there, and that affirms that there is still some distrust as it relates to the vaccine. And then finally, as it relates to mental health issues, the lack of representation of African-American therapists is paramount as well. I'm really pleased with the support that Purdue Student Graduate Association, as well as Purdue Student Government, has done to ensure that we were able to hire some additional African-American therapists and people of color in CAPS program. And you'll have the opportunity to engage with Mamie later on today, who is representing the African-American experience in CAPS. I wanted to pause to talk about what we have done at the Black Cultural Center as it relates to the COVID crisis and the racial unrest. Similar to everyone else on campus, we have transitioned all of our programs into a virtual environment, but we've adopted a slogan, and that's the BCC, you might be physically distant, but yet we want you to be socially engaged. We really want to develop a culture of caring and connection at the Black Cultural Centers. We've also designed some virtual experiences to ensure that students are able to make those personal connections. So even though it's virtual, there is some social connections that are happening. We have a bi-weekly Netflix and Chili Night. We have played some games such as Black Card Revoked and Kahoot Black History Month. We've transitioned some virtual learning labs and have had cooking demonstrations as well, so that we encourage the students to cook a dish together and try to fight some of the food insecurity through items from the ACE food pantry. We're also offering Zoom office hours with CAP staff, and even our staff, even though we're de-densified as a staff at the Black Cultural Center, we are open from 8 a.m. until 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. to the public. And we find that we're having a number of students come in and just have some general conversations with us. We are also focusing on Black joy. We want to be able to help students heal. And we know that there's a lot of negative images out there and stereotypes. So we want to focus on the Black joy. And then finally, at the Black Cultural Center, we offer lots of grace at the center. We're patient with our students, and we have some flexibility, and we want to be a resource for our students. We are continuing to do programming at the Black Cultural Center, and I wanted to extend this one. I thought it would be of particular interest to the listening audience. It's an upcoming panel discussion on mental health and the Black community, and it's actually going to be on March the 9th at 7 p.m., and you can register via our website. And as I close out, I want to share with you that I don't do all this work by myself. We have an amazing administrative team at the Black Cultural Center. Here are some snapshots of the BCC team. And again, we are open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. And I would encourage you to stop in and visit with some of our staff members. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Renee. All right, so now let's move on. Let's see who is presenting next. Okay, Pam, if you want to go ahead and share your screen.
Thank you. I'm not here by myself. I'm actually inviting Jin Putra to join me because, you know, this work requires a lot of, teamwork and collaboration. So go ahead, Denny.
Hello, everyone. My name is Denny Putra, and I'm currently the graduate assistant here at the Purdue ARC.
So we're going to talk similarly about the impacts of COVID-19, especially to Asian American and Asian communities, and how Purdue ARC has responded. So we are going to divide it into kind of four parts, how COVID-19 impacts mental health and well-being in terms of public health and personal health issue, and then anti-Asian bias and BIPOC solidarity, business and employment, and academic opportunities. And it's important to understand that all of these may impact, right, certain Purdue students, faculty, staff at the same time. So it's very important to understand that. And if you take away anything, we would like to emphasize the pedagogy, cultural initiatives, and advocacy work that we do, emphasizing collaborations and solidarity. So one issue that we would like to highlight today in terms of public and personal health is obviously COVID-19 has caused, right, death, pain, grief to all communities, but Filipino nurses especially has been hit hard by the pandemic. Filipinos make up 4% of nurses in the United States, but 31.5% of nurse deaths from COVID-19. And we know for a fact that a lot of our Purdue Filipino students, they have family members who work as nurses. So this is impacting them directly. It is important also when we talk about Filipino nurses to go back to the idea of, U.S. empire, and how the issue of empire has been influencing Filipino nurses' migration into the United States. It's important also to talk about impact of COVID-19 in terms of health and disaggregating the data, especially for Asian and Asian American communities. And as we see from the quote here, when you're talking about Asian Americans and their vulnerability to COVID-19, how much of it is Filipinos versus Vietnamese and different stories that would emerge based on those populations? Anti-Asian bias also has been rising. We got also some concerns at Purdue community, phone calls asking if, you know, our communities are impacted. Stop AAPI Hate, a reporting center, national reporting center, has reported back to the community that more than 1,000 cases of bias incidents has been reported between 8-week period in the beginning of COVID-19, and about 69.3% involves verbal harassment. This impacts everyone, including Asian, Asian American healthcare workers and professionals who work on the front line, you know, risking their lives to fight against the virus. And the latest Pew Research Center report talks about how Black and Asian American communities are most likely to report adverse experiences due to their race or ethnicity since the pandemic began. So this is something to think about, the toil of that impact of these into mental health and well-being of our students. But at the same time, there's also, Renee mentioned earlier about the racial unrest, and it has also impacting Asian and Asian American communities in thinking about, you know, what solidarity looks like in this time. And there's a lot of conversation, diverse conversation, about what it means to address anti-Asian bias and racism with transformative justice, looking into solidarities with other BIPOC communities, especially the Black communities, whether it's K-pop fans trending hashtag replacing White Lives Matter, or solidarities for Asian American elderly, or even conversations with other BIPOC communities about what to do.
And the impact of COVID-19 also coming into like small businesses, especially looking at the Chinatown. I also want to emphasize more on the unemployment that's been rising the data says in May it was rising about 15% for Asian American unemployment, and it was still like 10.7% in August. And I think it's not only about the businessman, or, you know, it's impacting also the family members of those who are unemployed. And specifically, we talked about if we considering like students, international students and domestic student who is primarily supported, having financial support from their parents. And if their parents are unemployed, then it's also impacting their academic opportunity here at Purdue. Okay, thanks. Next is also, and think about how this COVID-19 specifically impacting students who have some challenges to take some remote classes, especially those who are like, if you think about like, again, like international students who are on a different time zones, they have a different studying environment, resources, technological support. And it's really difficult for them to continue being motivated to study as if they were here in the United States. And another thing is also related to visas and policy changes in the past years, where some of the students were having some struggles to even applying for the visas, and fearing or hearing about policies that keep changing in the US. So it's very important that these students also need to have continually inform of what's happening here.
Hey, Pam, you are still muted.
So how do we help our students, right, navigating the situation through our pedagogy, cultural initiatives, and also advocacy? We want to make sure that we are still open and give support to our communities. Even though it's gentrification, we have to change hours, allowing for virtual tour, but making sure that our space is still open for people who need that.
And working with the mental health and wellness of the Asian American, Purdue ARC has been collaborated continuously with the CAPS, Purdue CAPS, to provide like consultations hours and also workshop with Cassiana Warfield, who is also our liaison here, CAPS liaison here at Purdue CAPS. So given like a weekly, again, office hours consultation for students to talk about mental health and their wellness.
So career opportunities are very important. There was just students reporting, you know, that with the cancellations of jobs and internship, we want to partner with CCO to provide opportunities for students to network and also gain some additional support during this time.
And with some of the students' organization is moving from in-person to online virtual events. So we've been very helpful, been collaborating with SAO and thankful for Cassandra, who's been always been supportive of the student organizations to ask questions or giving support for what they needed in moving, transitioning into a virtual event, like social life events for the students.
Mm-hmm. We also wanted to provide Purdue communities with teaching resources about anti-Asian bias. So that was the first thing that we did, is providing the opportunity that's available on our website. We want to keep our conversation going through our programming. So for example, this Thursday, Dr. Anabu Yarieva will talk about how Central Asian women in the United States work on raising awareness about COVID-19 in Central Asia. So we want to keep our conversation going about how we can forge solidarities with BIPOC communities through speaking engagement with Dr. Nitasha Sharma, who really advocates against, you know, just staying in your own lane, but moving out, you know, speaking about solidarity about with other community members. We want to invite people who really a creative industry, who work closely with people who are impacted by the pandemic. Ruby Ibarra is one of them. She works in the company that wants to find vaccine, wanted to find vaccine for COVID-19, and Ruby has been speaking strongly about solidarity, speaking strongly about the experience of Filipino nurses in the United States. So that's why she'll be coming, and keeping the conversation going by inviting Dr. Russell Zhang, co-founder of AAPI, Stop AAPI Hate, talking about anti-Asian racism and resistance. And this is also coming up, bystander intervention training for anti-Asian hate.
As part of the ARC Research Lab, we also do a place-based research, which is focused more on the anti-Asian, current anti-Asian bias during the pandemic, as well as the history of, again, anti-Asian and racism that happened in the US. And we also like looking into collaborations between the Asian American Asian communities and also Black communities.
And with right events, festival, holiday celebration looming in the middle of COVID-19, we thought about, okay, how can we forge solidarities, getting people together safely? So we move our Lunar New Year to a virtual program while still allowing student organizations and community organizations to participate. So that was one of the way, hopefully, to make right this season more joyful, even a little bit celebratory for our communities. So these are some of the things that we do, and a lot of thoughtful programming in order to keep the conversation going and solidarity going. Thank you so much, BGSG, for facilitating this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pam and Denny, for presenting. Okay, and now I will hand over the mic to Felica.
Okay, thank you so much for that introduction, and let me go ahead and get my screen up here. And, oh, good. Okay, great. Well, thank you again for inviting us to participate in this particular presentation. It's good to see that there's such interest in learning more about how our individual populations are being impacted, but more importantly, you know, what's the best way we can help students out there. So before I begin, I would like to thank Sarah for the invitation, as well as PSG for hosting this again. It's good to share this information. I have presented before, so it's good to be back again and presenting with the PSG group. As always, when I do my presentations, I always like to start with a land acknowledgement. And for me as a Native woman, it's always important to take a critical look at the land which we stand upon, and to think about who were the original indigenous caretakers of the area. Before Purdue University was established, before the state of Indiana was established as well, this was the original homeland of the Potawatomi, the Lenape, the Miami, and the Shawnee. And there were some additional tribes that were that called Indiana home, but due to forced relocation, or else in some cases just outright extinction, these tribes no longer, or the people no longer, have their footprint left upon the earth. So as a result, we want to make sure that we're honoring their traditions and how they were land stewards, taking care of Mother Earth and making sure that we were that we have this beautiful land with the trees, everything about it. I guess that's something that's what's indicative with Native people, is that there's a strong connection to Mother Earth, and it is our responsibility to take care of it as best as we can. So for my presentation today, I'll do a little bit introduction about the center, and then talk about specifically how the pandemic is impacting tribal communities. As you've heard from all the culture centers, or you'll hear from at least three of the culture centers, we are part of the Division of Diversity and Inclusion under the Office of the Provost. Dr. John Gates provides leadership for the centers. And for the NACC, we were established in 2007. And at the time, we were the first cultural center to open in the state of Indiana on a college or university that was specifically devoted to Native people. And we're one of five culture centers across campus. Our focus is on Indigenous people, which include Native Hawaiians, Alaska Native, and Native Americans. And since we've opened our doors in 2007, we've been tracking the number of Native tribes that are represented across the country. There are 574 federally recognized tribal nations. However, at Purdue, we have over 65 tribal nations that are represented. So we're really glad that we have such a diversity within our student representation. Maybe I should say our Boilermaker representation, because it's not only students, but we're also talking about faculty, staff, and also students. And just in the same capacity as how the other culture centers operate, we are really emphasizing that we're nurturing student learning and success, and we're providing educational opportunities for the campus to learn about Native people. Services we provide, we're building a community, our sense of belonging for Purdue students and faculty to come in and visit us. We do this through different types of events and hosting lecture presentations, inviting Indigenous speakers to come and speak with us, and then also advocating on behalf of students in supporting their academic success and intercultural learning opportunities. We are actively recruiting Native students to come to Purdue, and as a result, we want to make sure that we're building a place where they can come and feel at home and be able to connect with other Native students. But on the other hand, we open our doors to the entire campus community. So we have many people from all different backgrounds that come and use the center. This was both pre-COVID and post-COVID. While we're in this state right now, we do have students that come and visit us on a very limited basis, but as a result, they know that they can come and find a place to study and a place to kind of just connect with people across campus. In terms of how the COVID pandemic is impacting tribal communities, I have a couple of slides here I'll show talking specifically about Native people. And as you've heard from Renee, as well as from Pam, you know that the continuous message is that our populations, our marginalized populations, are suffering at a greater loss than many than the mainstream population. So, for Native communities, historically, Indian country has been disproportionately impacted, and this is not only through healthcare, economic development, educational access, but also in providing of just basic services. There are tribal communities out there in the United States in the year 2020 that do not have running water, that do not have access to electricity. So as a result, these communities were already at a disadvantage even before the pandemic hit. So that only doubled the amount of challenges that they had to face. And in some cases, the pandemic is decimating tribal communities. This is happening not only here closer to the Midwest, but more so out west. There are tribal communities that have lost their last language speakers. So once that last language speaker passes away, there is no connection to the language anymore. So that's where you see the most impact and how that's been detrimental to many communities. Some tribal communities have shut down their entire tribal communities. I mean, like the reservations or their pueblos, and so they have cut it off completely to non-natives or any type of tourists. And so, in New Mexico, there are some of the pueblos, the Taos Pueblo, the Tasuki, Santo Domingo. They basically just shut down services, so nobody was allowed to go in and visit. So that was a way that the tribes were trying their best to protect their citizens within their tribal boundaries. Looking at how Purdue was impacted specifically, we have students that are some of our students at Purdue, they are still connected, strongly connected to their tribal communities. And in that, they still speak their language quite fluently. They practice their traditional way of life and their ceremonies. And so once the pandemic hit, there was, many people had the strong desire to go and be with family and to be comforted and to have that sense of safety. However, for many of our tribal students, Native students, they could not go home because their families were telling them, don't come home, stay where you're at, because it was just because of how the tribal communities were being impacted. So as a result, we have one student who lost 8 tribal members, 8 family members to the pandemic. And, there was a strong desire to go back because for many Native people, once somebody passes away, we have specific ceremonies or we have specific ways to honor their memory, and many students were not able to participate in those ceremonies, so that was very impactful for them. Also, when some students did return back to their tribal community, they did not have access to just basic technology. They had to travel, travel from the reservation community to an urban, one of the border towns. And that's where they were able to, they had to log in. Just think about it, when we shut down, you guys, everybody had access to their laptops and the electricity, technology, but for tribal communities, for students, they had to travel in order to access, just to log in to submit homework or to attend lecture presentations. So that was another way that many students were impacted. And for our graduate students who were on, when we recruit students to Purdue, we really stress the importance of focusing their dissertation or their master's thesis on a topic that's relevant to their tribal community. And that's one way that keeps them grounded and connected to their tribal homeland. And so once that happened, many of the students were not able to return back and gather data or to conduct those interviews. And so that delayed their graduation research, but also put their timeline back, so that many of the students now were here in March, and they're catching up, and they're now trying to get their results submitted and get things going again. So that was something that negatively impacted students. Let's see, I did mention how families were discouraging students to not come home. And then lastly, that disconnection to their tribal ceremony is something that's very important to many students were not able to continue to that. So once they were able to come to the center, we were able to help them with, in terms of mental health issues, because there was an increase of depression and suicide, not only, this is across the country, but within our tribal community, we wanted to make sure that we were addressing those needs. And we immediately worked with our students on campus, as well as with our affiliated faculty and staff. We formed a phone tree. We were able to contact people to check in to see how they were doing. But also I let students know that if there's anything they needed, we have those resources available in terms of traditional resources. Many tribal nations across the country, they have different needs to honor their spirituality. And so if that's the case, I told the students, I have access to tobacco. I have access to sweetgrass and cedar and a number of different items available. So the students were able to contact me if they needed. And it's something as simple as giving tobacco, making an offering. That is one way the students that were able to help address some of those mental health issues. We had a student, this was years ago, but we had a student who lived in the residence hall. And so one of her ways of helping to de-stress from class and helping to with her mental health was to come to the center, use the center where she could smoke tobacco, roll the tobacco and make an offering. And so that was another way that we continue to serve our students, so they all know that they can continue to practice their traditional beliefs as while they're students at Purdue. Let's see, there was a return to traditional herbs and ceremonies that we tried to honor as best as possible. And then there was this, external resources in tribal communities across the country. We have these wonderful graphics that were provided by a nonprofit organization called Illuminative. They do a wonderful job in raising awareness as to how the impact the COVID impact is getting the message out there. And one of their campaign slogans was to warrior up. So they wanted to make sure, I have a couple of graphics here that demonstrate the warrior up campaign. And most recently, as of this month, there was this major report that was released by the Urban Indian Health Institute and data genocide of American Indians and Alaska Native and COVID-19. So this is a really excellent resource, a report card from each state and talking about how they have been, how their work has been, how the states have been working to help the indigenous populations across the state in averaging about a D+ for many states across the country. And so one thing I just want to stress is that with many Native people, they have access to free health care through the Indian Health Services, and this is under the Department of Health and Human Services. Medical facilities are located across the country. However, there's not one that's close by to us, given that we're here in Indiana. There's not a large Native representation here, tribal nations. We only have one federally recognized tribal nation recognized up in Michigan. So as a result, there is no IHS facility where students can go to receive access to free health care. For many students, they will intentionally travel, back to their tribal communities. And we have a couple of students here who would drive 2 days just in order to drive back home to their home community in order to have access to free healthcare. So as a result, you see this, we wanted to make sure students are getting information out there and hoping that we can get the vaccine to many of our Native students. Across the country, there has been an increase in the vaccine on many tribal nations. So you're seeing, we're now hearing stories of people back home. I'm glad to hear that my in-laws that live back in New Mexico, they both received their second shots. Family members, a lot of my whole family members are already have already received their vaccine. So there is this big drive and big push for the vaccine to be administered to tribal citizens across the country. So the closest community we have to access our Indian health services is going to be Pokagon Pottawatomie up in Dowagiac, Michigan. So we have had some talks with them and seen how we can continue to provide medical services for our students here on campus. But that kind of comes back to this big old report that was issued. It just came out, like I said, what is today? This is March, but it just came out last month. So there's this big, it contains a lot of good information, a lot of good data. So I would encourage if anybody is interested to access this through the Urban Indian Health Institute, and you can download the report to see the full report card and see how well states are doing, but also what are some recommendations and to improve the conditions. when we just, like, you know, my colleagues had mentioned, once we went into the pandemic, we really had to shift gears and find ways that we're able to help our students. We continued to keep our center open for the spring semester. We are on limited hours. Students can come and access the building to the public in the afternoons from 12 to 4. We have had some students who have made reservations so they can reserve specific study rooms. Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays and Fridays seem to be big days when we would have students at the center, but that allows them to block off. They can come and block off a time frame where they can study and use the center, and then they can do that in the safety. They just kind of close the door. They can, you know, do their work in the meeting rooms. So that service is still available to many of our students across campus. That also means that we reduced our staff. We wanted to make sure that we were able to provide more people that were able to come to the center. So we will have at least anywhere from 1 to 2 staff members at the center at all times during our office hours. We shifted to providing virtual programming throughout the year. And so we continue to operate in that particular capacity. We have a Sloan Indigenous Graduate Partnership Program that we meet with every we have a seminar that we continue to host. This is something that we wanted to make sure we can continue with this particular seminar, because it's a way for us to continue to connect with our students and to provide that mentoring services. And I also put in here that, our, again, with our NACC affiliate faculty and staff, they were helped to pitch in and connect with students as we were going into the shutdown mode. But we know that now that there's the faculty, staff that are available to connect with our students across campus. I'll be honest, this is another slide I used from an earlier presentation. So this just talks about our Sloan Indigenous Graduate Partnership Program. And as our programs are continuing to move forward, I wanted to just kind of share this last slide with all of you, talking about how we, once we shifted gears to providing virtual services, one of our successful programs has been the Tribal Immersion Program. And this allows us to provide a cross-cultural experience for students to visit tribal communities. This year, we shifted into a virtual format. So we are advertising this program now. If you're interested in joining us, Decolonizing the Southwest is our virtual tribal immersion experience. This allows students as well as the campus community to come and join us. We're modeling this after the BCC and their wonderful program they hosted. So this is, we're adding our own Indigenous spin to this in terms of providing an opportunity for people across campus to come and visit a tribal community. And we're doing this by visiting. We have daily virtual presentations. We're going to have interactive activities. We're going to be taking some virtual tours of national parks and exploring some tribal museums and cultural centers. So if there's an interest, we are going to be, I know this, Deb is going to send us out with our newsletter tomorrow, but we will have this program available in case people are interested in joining us. So with that, we are, like I said, we're available at the center, and you're welcome to come and visit us. I strongly encourage students to give us a call and to check in first. Our population, again, has been very small coming in, but then again, the biggest message that we want people to understand is that the Native Center, as well as all the culture centers, are not just for our own populations, but they're open to the entire campus community. So if there's an interest in visiting us, come by and visit, and then check out some of the programs that we have, because I know we do have a lot of collaborations coming up with the ARC, as well as the BCC, as well as with the LCC and LGBTQ Center. So hopefully you'll be able to continue to utilize our services. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for inviting me. And if you can follow us on social media, or else visit our website for more information.
Thank you so much, Felica. All right. And finally, Mamie will be talking next.
Hello. Thank you. I just want to say thank you for the invite and for all of the information that has been shared thus far on this talk. My name is Mamie Butler. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I am a staff therapist and liaison to the Black community at CAPS. And I'm new to Purdue, new to CAPS, just started in September, but I'm really glad to be a part of Boiler Nation. Is that what we would call ourselves? Just checking. I want to give a shout out to Renee Thomas, who covered a really perfect synopsis of mental health in the Black community. and COVID. And I don't, I know that some of the things I'm going to say might really reiterate some of the things that have already been talked about today. And so I'm going to try to shift a little bit and talk more about CAP services, as well as what is happening for Black folks and Black folks' mental health right now during COVID. So one of the things that I think is important to talk about is how anxiety, depression, and trauma manifests currently for a lot of Black and Brown folks during COVID, during isolation, fear of not knowing the future or not having control over the future, coursework and how strenuous it is. And this might look like perfectionism, control, imposter syndrome could be a part of that, as well as family pressure, high expectation, racism itself, that really create insufferable conditions for students, for Black students, as you navigate not only academia, but the world around you. I wanna kind of quote something that I've recently become aware of, which is how difficult it is to breathe while Black, and acknowledge how some of the racism that has happened over the course of the year, but not just this year, every year, how it's more and more difficult to breathe, to take a conscientious breath, and feel and be connected to Black bodies. And that part of the struggle with mental health is learning to connect to our physiological selves and learn to also connect to this breath that we so often don't have control over, or is really taken away in many ways, whether it's through racist activities that impact Black and Brown folks, or things, intersectional identities that people hold, and COVID itself, and the fact that, as Renee said, and many others have said, COVID is impacting Black and Brown folks in a way that is different, vastly different than white Americans and Black folks who have comorbid health issues, are dying at higher rates, and also have lack of access to vaccines, are being vaccinated less frequently. And it's important that the stigma around COVID and the stigma around mental health are things that we address. So one of the things that I find is particularly difficult for students to come to therapy is the stigma around, one, not having therapists of color. And as I am the one Black therapist at CAPS now, and we have several other therapists of color at CAPS, it can be difficult to connect, to make real genuine connections with therapists who don't look like you or may not have the same experiences as you. But also that during COVID and the fact that CAPS is not seeing people face to face, it is more difficult to build relationships with people virtually. And so it takes much more work on the part of the therapist to make those connections, those genuine connections with folks, and have buy-in and gain mutuality to bring people into the services and let them feel safe in this space, in the therapeutic space. So outside of not having therapists of color, I think that Black folks are steered away from therapy for many other reasons, religious reasons, which can be actually used to help be a helpful alternative to therapy. But also there are conversations about like airing dirty laundry and help-seeking behaviors that are counterintuitive. And so really talking about what it looks like to get help, to seek help, what things are happening for folks that make you realize that maybe what you're experiencing is something that a mental health professional can help you with. And oftentimes I see students coming in with panic attacks, anxiety, depression, at higher rates currently due to COVID, and just due to the pressures of being a student. And so I think that part of the work is figuring out what is happening for Black students that is shifting the need to come to therapy and maybe focusing more on getting things done, spending more time, as I call it, button chair, looking at your computer, doing work, spending more time being focused or hyper-focused on getting things done the right way, which creates some sort of procrastination for some folks as far as like the anxiety to turn things in and have it be right, the anxiety around making sure that you are participating in all the events that you can possibly be participating in. Oftentimes it shifts focus from the current experiences that are difficult and focuses it elsewhere to things that are more tangible to do. So I always like to have folks come in and talk about some of the things that, one, physiologically is happening. I always talk about breath. Do we notice how we're breathing on a regular basis? Do we notice our mind racing? Do we notice our heartbeat? Do we notice our bodies and how we feel? And oftentimes these things can be a part of a mental health issue, such as anxiety, or things that are happening as a part of what's just happening for everyone right now. But because Black and Brown folks experience racism, mental health takes a much greater amount of energy mentally and physically as far as the impact. And so really talking about how to kind of break down some of those barriers that get people to come to therapy. For as far as my role at CAPS, I think it's important for me to make sure that Black folks realize that therapy is not always because something really tragic or terrible is going on. I'm aware of oftentimes Black people have undiagnosed concerns or often misdiagnosed because of cultural incompetence within therapy and psychiatry and in the mental health field in general. And that sometimes the thought about going to therapy feels like it needs to be something really, really bad. I find that a lot of students come to therapy and underreport things like anxiety, underreport things like drinking or substance use, which oftentimes are product of the stress that we're experiencing. And so being able to shift the lens as far as what it looks like, what it feels like to talk to someone else about what you're going through and the impact of talking to someone else, how it can reduce stress, having a non-judgmental ear and how important that may be, how important it is to be able to share your story without having someone center themselves in their stories, without having to carry other people's stuff. So coming to therapy is more than just a diagnosis or the potential for having something really extreme going on. And if there is something going on, therapy is the best option to get help. And at CAPS, we offer free sessions for students, but we also have psychiatric sessions services as well with our psychiatrists on staff. We have social workers that help folks where we can help folks get their needs met outside of CAPS if we can't meet the needs of students within CAPS itself. One of the things that I think that I'm also trying to do as in my role here is increase outreach services to Black and Brown students. This semester, we actually started two new groups. One is a BIPOC support group, USO support group, and the other one is a multicultural women's empowerment group. So we're working to provide groups that will meet the needs of students, especially who are struggling during COVID and are struggling to find support and connection. I'm hoping that these groups can provide a little bit of that support. I'm also working to start groups that are more based on Black identity. And so hopefully we can get support groups for Black folks specifically up and running soon, whether it's a support group or a group or a workshop where folks can come and gather and talk and share experiences. I think that will be really, really important for boosting morale and motivation for Black students. We have currently groups and workshops and liaison hours up and running with all of the cultural centers. Our groups, we have about three or four groups, USO groups, running every week that are open to all students, and then the BIPOC USO group that is open to Black and Brown student populations. We also offer workshops around anxiety, stress, depression, mindfulness that are really, really impactful in helping folks decrease the physiological signs of anxiety, depression, and increase motivation to get things done, increase positive adjustment to COVID, but also other things that are going on in their lives. We have support groups for folks who actually have COVID and are in isolation or quarantine, just to also provide some support to people who might have had a diagnosis and had to quarantine themselves. So the last thing that I want to end on is I started off with the breath work and how important it is breathing while Black. I think that racism itself is, we've talked about that being, you know, a mental health crisis in the United States and a public health crisis. And oftentimes we as a people don't take the liberty to engage in things that are pleasing, that are self-care, that can really impact a change and a shift emotionally, and how that emotional shift and that mental shift can change our bodies, our health, our overall health and well-being, because there is a deeply rooted connection between all of those things. So I want to share something called the Black Breath Project, Breathing While Black. It is a zine, an electronic visual zine, which I can send out. But it offers many different perspectives about Black bodies and breathing, and how important it is, but also how we can regain control of our breath, and in that, our physical and mental health overall. And so there's one exercise that I kind of want to take lead off of this zine and do briefly here with you all. So I want you all to take a deep breath and take a deep breath, inhale for four, hold for four, and exhale for five. So I'm gonna count and take a deep breath in. One, two, three, 4, hold, 3, 2, 1, exhale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Be gentle with yourself. Be patient. Let yourself breathe. And know that you deserve compassion and grace as we navigate COVID and racism in the world while getting educated in the system. So be patient and be gentle and breathe. I should probably say that you can contact me at the CAPS website, which I can also share a link to that in the chat.
Thank you so much, Mamie. All right, so now we will be going into our Q&A session. I just want to thank all of our speakers one more time for their really awesome presentations. So we have a few questions from the RSVP forms, but also feel free to unmute yourself and ask any questions or put your questions in the chat. Or if you want to message me privately, I can ask the question for you if you want to ask anonymously. I'd just like to start with one of the first questions from the RSVP form, which was, after an initial consultation with CAPS, how can I choose a therapist who is a POC? Maybe Mamie is the best person who can answer this question as somebody who works with CAPS.
Absolutely. So I always like to encourage and empower students to advocate for themselves. When you have an initial consultation, therapists will likely ask folks, is there a particular person that you would like to see or a particular identity that you would like to be a present during this process, during this journey with you? If that's not asked, I always encourage people to ask if there are folks that they are just to state, like, there is someone that I have in mind that I would like to see. We have many different therapists of color on staff currently. And so if folks want to look online to get a bigger picture, a better picture of who these folks are, and they come with the name of a person that they have kind of looked at the website and said, I really like this person and what they're talking about, or just to say that they would like to talk to someone, to see a therapist of color, it is within your right to say that I want to see someone who looks like me or who has shared experiences as me. And I actually have a large amount of students who are Black and Brown students because they have specifically asked for me or they've specifically asked for other Black and Brown staff. I want to normalize asking for what you need. Ask for it. Advocate for yourselves. And if you get a therapist that you don't jive with, I like to say this because I'm the only Black therapist currently. I'm not going to jive with everybody. We're not going to all, it's not going to be, I don't know. I'm not perfect. I'm not the answer to all the things. I'm not going to resolve all the things. And I work really, really hard to make those connections, maintain them, and help students get what they need. And so asking, talking about it, give a person 3 tries. I like to, so if I have a session with the therapist and it's not going so well, I like to give that person 3 chances before deciding, I don't want to talk to you anymore, I want to see someone else. And at CAPS, you can talk to Kyle Kittleson. He is our director. You can talk to him directly, shoot him an email. If you have an initial consultation with someone and you're not comfortable seeing that person and you're not comfortable asking for someone, you can still shoot Kyle Kittleson an email and say, hey, I had an initial consultation with this person and I really would like to get set up with this person. Because I understand also that it can be really hard to name those needs, especially in a new environment when you are doing this for the first time.
Thank you so much. Does anybody in the audience have questions? If not, I can move on to some more questions from the RSVP form. Okay. So let's go to the next one, which was, some of you guys touched on this, but anybody feel free to answer this. How have the activities of the cultural centers changed due to COVID? And anyone, if you can feel free to chime in on the kinds of changes that have explicitly been made.
Well, I think that most of us have addressed that in terms of all of our programming is virtual now is one big change. We have also readjusted our hours. Most of us are open 10 to 4, Monday through Friday. And then we have de-densified our spacing as well. So we're sensitive to not having large gatherings and that type of thing in our centers.
And I would also add that even though we don't have many students coming through our center, we are seeing an increase in our virtual services, meaning that if a student has an issue, they'll call and they'll text or they'll email. And so I've seen that almost triple with us. You know, we have students who would often come to the center and visit us. However, I'm getting messages that they'll say, hey, I'm not on campus. I'm working from home, but is it okay if I call and talk with you? Or is it okay if you could help proofread this particular? We offer a variety of services. And so in some cases I've served as an editor, I've served as a proofreader, a cat sitter, a babysitter, you know, all different type of services, but the students know that we're there to provide that type of help. And we often go above and beyond. So I have seen that happen is that, you know, I'm seeing an increase in calls and text messages and even just students just checking to say, hey, are you there at the center? And even if it's just coming in, they just kind of talk with us from, you know, of course we're practicing safe social distancing, but at least it's just wanting to say hi, it just wanted to see somebody else on campus. But I think it's important for students to know that we have adjusted our services. So if that's something you need, just kind of reach out to all of us and we can continue to help you in that capacity.
Thank you so much. Okay, we have a question in the chat. I'm gonna go ahead and read that out loud. So it is there any specific programming the cultural centers are undertaking to draw in students who have joined Purdue during the pandemic and hence are not so aware of all of the resources on campus?
Yeah, I can give one question and then I can go back and do another one. We have partnered with a lot of student organizations in different ways. The ARC is doing a monthly meeting with ASOP, so Asian Student Union Board, that has a lot of student organization and Asian interest members. So hopefully they might not be aware of the resources on campus, but usually they're drawn to their involvement with other students through this student organizations. So we want to facilitate that conversation as much as we can by, you know, joining their meeting. We are also usually at their call outs as well, these student organizations. So we keep that conversation going that way. And one thing that we emphasize, the ARC emphasizes during our meeting with student orgs is, you know, there are many ways that you can access us. We are available through phone, right, and website and newsletter. We are on social media. So just making sure that they are aware, they can contact us anytime if they would like more information.
And the other thing that the Black Cultural Center has done is two major outreach. One was we did a mailing to all entering first year students, particularly African Americans, and invited them to tour this center. And if they did, they were able to get some BCC swag. So we had some giveaways as a motivation to get them physically inside of the center. And then we also recognize that particularly during COVID and the racial unrest, it's important for people to have creative outlets. So our performing arts ensembles have really played a key role in allowing opportunities for students to share about their experiences through a creative way. And we had our first virtual coffee house performance and had a really good conversation afterwards to talk about some of the issues that were addressed in those performances. And we did study break bags as well, little giveaways
whenever we had it's not a study break, but when we had the day off from classes and invited students to come to the Black Cultural Center and get a little treat bag to assist them with their study.
Also, another thing that the ARC does, and I think everyone here is doing as well, is communicating with a lot of professors. So going through classes to give presentations. So hopefully even though they're not familiar yet, through right listening of how the cultural centers are working during this time in their classes, they're more likely to get excited and are aware of these resources. So if everyone is watching right now and you are teaching a class, or you were a TA for a class, and you would like your students to be aware of this resources, feel free to contact us.
Okay, there is another question in the chat. Let me just go ahead and read it out loud. So the question is, how do you feel about the large scale institutional level policy changes in light of the three pandemics, namely COVID, racial trauma, and mental health? Do you feel Purdue is better positioned to make more equitable changes than it was during pre-pandemic times?
You know, I feel like one of the biggest changes, particularly as it relates to some of the racial trauma that people are experiencing, is that there tends to be a amplified interest in the Black experience in particular. And not only amplified, but also a greater awareness of some of the challenges and some of the disparities that exist, particularly the healthcare disparities that we're seeing in COVID. I think as a member of the African American community, we have always been aware of this, but for many of our colleagues and non-people of color, it was their first time really having this type of exposure for whatever reason. So I think that there's an increased level of interest. I'm excited about the fact that there's been a university task force on equity that has been commissioned at the trustee level. So I think that we're seeing the potential for change that we have not previously seen before. So I'm looking forward to rolling up my sleeves and assisting the university in achieving some of its goals.
And I would also echo Renee's comments, because I think especially for our Native population on campus, we're such a small, you know, we account for less than 1% of the total population. And that really, the whole, racial unrest really helped to amplify our voices as well. So I think it gave our students the opportunity to speak out more about their experiences. And even in the classroom, I just had a really good conversation with a student who talked about how, you know, she didn't, she would often not really voice her opinion in the classroom, but now, given that the professor knows that she's Native, and if there's any issue that comes up pertaining to Native people, she always felt that she shouldn't be able to speak out, because in that context, she felt like she was speaking out, she was representing all Native people. And so, you know, that's always a big burden to place upon any person, any underrepresented person in the classroom. So one of the conversations we had is that it's important to voice your opinion, but if you want to speak from your own perspective. So I would say, for me as a Navajo woman who grew up in New Mexico, this is my experiences with this particular topic. So that way, her statements are not being reflected to think that she's talking on behalf of all Indigenous people across the country, but she can only share her own lived experiences from her community. So that's been something she really battled with. But I think with this whole movement, it really helped her to understand that, you know, my voice is important. It matters how I'm able to share my experiences and how to give more of an accurate depiction of Native people in the classroom, as opposed to having this historical perspective that is often used in many of the topics. So I think that's been very helpful for her.
And also, I would like to add, I know my colleagues here and all of our centers have been involved in regional conversations as well about the impact of COVID-19, work closely with our counterparts in other universities in the Midwest How can we not only stretch our resources, but also what can we do to each other in bringing all of the BIPOC communities in the Midwest into conversation with each other? So I think that's important to note that the regional conversations that have been happening in terms of preparing, keep preparing our institutions to run together with each other towards more equitable experience for BIPOC communities.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like with the momentum and the awareness that's created, we need to use that to our benefit. And I guess as PJC Life, we'd like to effectively program any other events or host conversations such as this in the future and make it a more commonplace. And this way, the availability for such a resource won't be so scarce. So I guess, yeah, thank you again for making this happen. Sarah, did we have any other questions?
One quick final question that we might want to go through is, and some of you guys touch on this, but maybe it's a good closing question, which is, where can I keep updated on all the ongoing activities at each of the cultural centers?
I think I'll go ahead and start. I think it's important that if there's an interest in getting involved, where all our doors are open, we welcome all different type of perspectives. So you're welcome to join us. We have at the NACC, we do have information that's available on our social media sites. We have a weekly newsletter that goes out. We're actually getting ready to post it tomorrow, and that'll list all the upcoming activities. Two events that may be of interest, we're hosting a beading workshop, B-E-A-D-I-N-G. I had to say that, I had to spell it out because somebody thought I was using a different type of beading workshop. But we're inviting Michelle Reed, who is a well-known beader. She's up from the Lac Femalo Nation, and she's going to be joining us. We're going to be beading some medallions. And again, this is one of our anti-stress activities because we really want students to have a chance to come together and just learn about different cultures, but also to make something in the process. That's coming up in March 18th. So we're asking students to pre-register. And then we're also hosting a yoga session with, we have an indigenous instructor who's going to be really combining her connection to Mother Earth and, you know, using that whole concept there. So Pearl will be leading a workshop. So those two classes will be coming up. I'm sorry, those two workshops will be coming up, and they'll be in our newsletter that will be released tomorrow. We'll also have that on our website and also on our social media site. So I hope that you'll be able to join us.
For the ARC, would like to echo Felica's invitation to connect with us. Come to the center 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mondays to Fridays. Go to our website, Purdue Asian American and Asian Resource and Cultural Center. We are at Purdue AAARCC on social media. We have a daily posting that our social media team is running to kind of get more awareness about the issues surrounding Asian communities. So there are opportunities for all of you who are watching to get involved with us. If not, you can always email us and call us and get your questions answered. Thanks.
Okay, so that is all of our questions. And I just want to thank you guys all so much for coming to talk with us today. I think this is a great resource, and I really appreciate you guys taking your time to share all of this information with us. I just want to finally remind everyone that there is a link in the chat to record your attendance and also a link to a feedback form to tell us how we did. And with that, I'll be adjourning this. Thank you guys all so much for coming. It's so great to talk to all of you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.